Hello and welcome to the Zach Think Share podcast. I'm excited to bring to you today Paige Turner, actually Paige Connell, aka Paige Turner. You may have seen her on social media. I'd like to think we're becoming friends. We're in the same state. She's soon to be a Fair Play facilitator as well. But what I really appreciate and love most about her is the way that she articulates the mental load, the invisible labor that goes on. And I think a subject that's hard to talk about because of the sort of the privilege that is required within it, which is talking about childcare and the payment of it. And she's really opened my eyes in a couple different ways. Paige, you've opened my eyes in a couple different ways in terms of like how to think about that. So thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I'm going to share first a little bit about like one major like thought gap that you filled for me. And then I'm going to ask you a question about mental load. So one of the major videos, I think probably one of your earlier viral ones, was talking about like why it's important for you to pay for childcare, which is stupid expensive. You talked about how like if I take a couple years off of my career, that changes the trajectory for how much I'm able to earn. And as I was a previous math teacher, like all I can see is just the graph of it and how like if it's steady going up, but if you steady and then there's a pause, and then it's probably not as steady of a curve afterwards. And so like that missing area in between those two lines is like the missing amount, which is less. Which is more than the amount that you're actually paying for childcare. So that has been one of the huge things that you've added to my like understanding for invisible labor, for like the wage gap and for a lot of those things, and where the mental load can be accounted for financially almost in a lot of ways. So I want to, is there anything else you'd want to add to your sort of title slash kind of who you are and what you bring to social media?
No, I think you covered it. You know, the terms these days are subject to kind of everybody's lived experiences, right? But I think of myself as a paid working mom, you know, has a job outside of being a mother. And I think that's kind of where my differentiator has come from, that perspective of both having a job, but also managing so much of the mental load of parenting and motherhood. And that's kind of really where I've found my home, at least on social media, and have been able to connect with others.
Actually, I was going to ask you one question. I'm going to switch over given that is I find there are moments, I think the layup answer to this that I want to create content and keep fighting this issue is because I don't want my daughter to live in a world where like the norm is what it is right now. What is it that angers or like slash inspires you to create, or like those first videos that you made before you were saw yourself maybe as a content creator, like what got you in front of the camera?
Yeah, you know, I lived it. I think that's what got me in front of the camera, which is I had been living this frustrating experience of resenting my partner, feeling confused about how we ended up where we were, wondering if women had been lying to me forever about what I could expect as a working mother, as a wife, all of it. And I think it was this like inherent anger that lived in me that got me talking about it. I was angry and I wanted to kind of share my experience. And as I exited that stage of my life, then I was really catapulted forward by all the women I was hearing from who were still in it, who are still very much in it. And a lot of them who maybe don't have partners who are willing and able to adapt and make changes within their relationship. And so that's what's kept me going. But what really jumpstarted it was just my own lived experience and feeling like people weren't seeing it, like that it was invisible. And I felt like if I didn't say it, then nobody would ever see me and what I was experiencing day to day in my life.
When you started talking about those things and like realizing that it just felt like an unheard story, like something you needed to share, were there other creators that like you saw talking about things that like you were really glad they were sharing their challenging experiences that sort of inspired some of it?
Yeah. You know, over time, I've learned to really admire different creators for how they've decided to tackle all of these conversations, right? I'd seen Laura Danger, and I'd seen you, and I'd seen Abby, and resonated with the content. I wouldn't say that's where I started creating content. I was more just like absorbing it and feeling it and relating to it. And I'm sure like many people, my content was all over the place when I started. Like I didn't have a niche. I didn't have a purpose. I just was putting my thoughts out there. But the more that certain messages were resonating, I kind of realized kind of where that opportunity was to actually have an impact on other people the way that you and other creators had on me. And I think that's really where it made the difference is once you start to hear that feedback and you see yourself in those followers, right? You see yourself and you're like, that's, I was there. I feel that. I feel this connection and I want to do more of this with you.
What did you used to make content about?
Oh, I don't know. Everything. My first video, which is really my niche at the end of the day, right? It's like mom content. Like I'm a mom of four kids. I made a video about the cutoff and how I have a baby who was born after the cutoff. And I didn't realize that in doing so, I'd be spending an additional $20,000 a year for her childcare because she won't go to kindergarten on time and, or quote unquote on time. And I made a video about that. And it was my very first video. And I think I got like 300,000 views and moms were just going at it in the comments. And I was like, whoa, what did I do? I didn't mean for this. And so that's kind of where my content started. It was just kind of thoughts on the everyday experiences of being a mom. And that's where I started sharing about the cost of childcare and the childcare crisis as it stands today and the mental load and being a working mother with a full-time job, all of those things. It was just kind of my life. And now it's less about my life and more about the structures, right, and society as a whole. But I do share things about my life, but also have started to keep a bit of that more, you know, for me now that I have a slightly larger platform.
Yeah. When you look back on, you know, making videos. So for myself, I think there have been a handful that I've been proud of that haven't necessarily performed all that well, but like took a lot to either get off my chest or like was really vulnerable in like what I was sharing. Do you have like, what's one of your like favorite posts that you put out that maybe didn't get a ton of traction, but like took something to put out there?
You know, I actually think it's the opposite for me, which was there was a video that was really vulnerable for me that I was hoping wouldn't get traction and did. Because I basically put it out there, which I think, you know, I question now if I would have done it again today, but I said, you know, I was on the brink of wanting to get divorced. You know, like I was talking about how we've all heard that story about how a woman divorced her husband over dishes in the sink, right? She came home, there was dishes in the sink and she said, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm out. And I told a story about how that kind of happened to me, except for instead of us walking through divorce, we walked through like the fair play method and we did that together. But I was at that breaking point. Like I was at that point and you know, I made this video kind of on a whim, as you sometimes do, and then didn't look at it. And an hour later, I saw that it was gaining a lot of traction. And I was like, oh, no, you know, I didn't talk to my husband about this. I didn't. This is kind of us. You know, this is our marriage. This is our life. This is really vulnerable. But looking back, I'm glad I did it. Because I think those are the things we don't often talk about, right? Like it got to that point for us and it got there very quickly after having kids. Like we went from great and happy to like 2.5 years later, like I was done. I was so fed up. And yeah, it was really personal and I wasn't hoping it was going to get that much traction. I was kind of hoping it was one of the ones that was going to get kind of buried in the feed that I could always pull down later. Like, never mind, I'll take it down. And so that was really vulnerable and I still, it's still up. I've left it up. But you know, I think that was also a turning point for me where I was like, okay, I want to share moments like that. I also want to protect a bit of my marriage too, right? Because this journey is so personal to each of us and we all have our own priorities and desires for what we want it to look like.
What kind of conversations did that spark with your partner?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because at that point we were maybe over a year into this work of really trying to level the playing field at home. Yeah. And I think we'd walked through his insecurities and his defensiveness. And we were at a point where we both felt really secure in that story. I don't think he loved it, but I asked him, I said, do you want me to pull this down? Like, I can take this down. You let me know. And he's like, no, you know, this is what you talk about. This is why people follow you. This is what they need to hear. And, you know, it's fine. Leave it up. And he's not online really in any meaningful way. And he's like, that's probably for the best. But for us, it was really a conversation about, you know, what level of intimacy do we want to give people and to kind of what we personally experience, because there's a commentary on it, right? Like the comments can be really brutal and assume a lot about you mm-hmm. and your partner and all of those things. And so that can be the hardest part to walk through, not so much what I said, but the reaction to what I said and the vitriol that we can both receive there.
I imagine he probably did not go into the comments at all.
He never does. No,
that's a dangerous place to be.
I barely do sometimes, but yeah, no, he didn't.
Yeah. It depends on the video. I think sometimes I'm like, yeah, fucking bring it. Like, let's go. Like, what do you got for me?
Yeah.
And then every once in a while I'm like, damn. Yeah. I really screwed that video up. All right. I gotta eat the frog here and make an apology video. One thing I've tried to do in my time is, unless it's dangerous or like I'm realizing kind of like it hurt a family member or something, I try to stand by what I said and I might apologize, but like, I kind of want the proof out there to be like, yeah, like I'm a human. I make mistakes too. And I'll make an apology video. Like I'm going to link to it. I'm going to pin at the top of the comment section. Hey, and by the way, like, here's my follow-up video to this. Cause I recognize like what I said didn't land well. Like I made a video not long ago saying that I trained Alyssa to speak to me a certain way and people were despised that term trained, which I feel like every time I screw up, like leads to a really good conversation with Alyssa. And then I also said, I must have been feeling extra cheeky that morning or something, but I also said that she used her big girl voice, which is like something I think is, I kind of learned a new vernacular that we kind of use with each other sometimes. And it was really affirming to see how many people kind of like they're eating me alive in the comments. And then I thought that the response video, like I just stopped looking at the comments from the first one and saw like, how did they react to the follow-up? And there was a lot of love in there. And I feel like I try to humanize myself in that way. Have you had to like eat crow on videos before?
Yeah. Because sometimes you don't have the full perspective, right, of the people receiving your message, right? So like I remember making a video once from the perspective of a parent who is the primary parent for our children because I work from home, and I made a video about parent-teacher conferences. We had like 4 half days in a row the week before Christmas, and I was like, oh my gosh, like how am I supposed to work when these kids are here? But then I'm also supposed to go to the parent teacher conference, but I can't bring the kids. And so like I need childcare and like school's not childcare. Right. And it's like this whole story. And the teachers were like in the comments, pretty mad. Right. And they're like, we are mothers too. We are working parents too. Mm-hmm. Respect our time. And my perspective, like when I was saying it, was more just from my own lived experience. And it was not meant, like I didn't intend to encompass everybody. But I recognized after, right. Like, okay, this demographic is feeling very triggered by this comment because they don't get that recognition. They don't get the acknowledgement that not only are they parents, but they're also taking care of these children, our children, with little acknowledgement of the amount of time that takes, right? And you were a teacher, so I'm sure you're like, yep, got this. Yeah. And so I put up a response video and was like, I didn't say it correctly. I'm not asking teachers to solve this problem, right? Like, I'm not asking you to fix it.
It's like a larger issue. And I'm not at all shaming teachers for, or like unacknowledging them for like the hard work they do.
Yeah.
I was like, what is she about to say that she got shit for? Cause I can hear the pain in that, but yeah, I totally get that.
It's hard because sometimes you don't have the fullest perspective of everybody else's lived experience. So you can't always give the most well-rounded, thoughtful message. And then you learn and do better. Keep going.
What is, there might not be an answer to this one. What's one of the things that like you wish you could, so, you know, now we're, you know, 15 minutes into the podcast, you know, not, probably not thousands of people are going to hear it. What's like maybe the advice or the thing that you probably want to say, but you know, is just too dangerous to put in a, you know, 60 second clip. I'll go first is like, I think, all the time, I think I'm holding men accountable a lot to carrying the mental load, leaning in, like being vulnerable, decreasing defensiveness. And I do think that there's a lot of women that are saying like, I stopped making videos saying the way to, so I get probably a couple of DMs a day asking, how do I bring this up to my husband? So, I mean, my free download guide is like basically half of that, which is one, explaining mental load, and two, like how to bring it up to your partner. And I don't make 90-second videos saying, this is how you bring it up to your partner, because then they jump in the comments and say, stop telling us how to do this. We've been doing this. Like, don't tell us more about what to do. And so like, I'll share it on podcasts, because I think a lot of women listeners will come in, and it's a safer place to share something like that. But I usually say like, try to start using mental load, emotional labor in your everyday language. And have it be an objective thing that your partner can see in their own lives, so that when you start bringing it up in terms of the domestic work, they can be like, oh shit, yeah, that is mental load, that is emotional labor. What is the thing that you wish you could maybe talk more about, but it's just kind of too dangerous for short form?
Yeah, I never tell people to get a divorce, ever. Even though I do think there are times when it's appropriate. So, you know, I hope I never get divorced. I hope all of my friends have happy, successful marriages, my family, right? But I think there are always going to be situations where couples are no longer aligned. And especially when it comes to the mental load and the domestic labor conversation, where women are just feeling incredibly burnt out and undervalued. When they come to me and they say, my partner doesn't care, like he doesn't hear me, he doesn't care, he's told me he's not changing, he's not doing anything different, we've been talking about it for years, part of me really wants to say like, well, then maybe it's time to start having a different conversation, right? Like, are you willing to live like this? I knew I wasn't, right? I was not willing to live that way. And I was ready to have that conversation. I know not everybody is. And I'm also not in the business of, I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not here right to tell you what to do or how to live your life. But I do think there is, I made one video where I alluded to the fact that you could leave if you want to leave. And I got a lot of comments and DMs that were like, thank you for finally saying that. And I was like, oh, you know, I would say it more, but that I also don't, I don't want to be giving specific advice because I don't know anybody's marriage and I don't right know your lived experience. And I don't know if you're even capable of leaving, right?
Yeah.
That's not always possible yeah for everybody.
Yeah, and I don't get too many of those, but I've gotten a couple of DMs, and I remember DMing Laura Danger like with what to do with it back maybe 6 months ago, and someone said, Zach, like you gave me the courage to leave my marriage. I was like, oh no. But like but it kind of like, you're right. I think a lot of people are kind of looking for permission in a lot of places where they won't give themselves permission to make that choice. And yeah, it probably is somewhat healthy in a lot of situations. I don't know how many situations, I don't know what percent. But yeah, I totally agree. It's probably something that I would love to make follow-up videos and say, yeah, that might be, but like, you know, a 90 character comment is not nearly enough context to give even mildly decent advice to somebody. Maybe if they write you two or three books in the DMs on Instagram, but definitely not in the comment section.
No, I often say, I think this is something for a professional, you know, so we'll see.
When you say that you guys are kind of, we're pretty close to it, you know, in Fair Play, she talks about the blueberries moment where she's doing all the things. Did you have like a blueberry moment that you can recall?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember the day, like all of it. I was 2 months postpartum with my fourth baby. I do mornings alone. So my husband leaves before we wake up typically. He's at work very early. That's just how our world works. And so I do the mornings with four kids by myself. And so I, you know, at this stage, she's a tiny little baby. And so I'm wearing her and to get everybody else ready. And the things my husband had committed to doing was the trash, taking out the trash, including the diaper pail, and emptying the dishwasher. And the reason those things were important to me was because the trash is the trash. And when it's full, it means I can't put more trash in it. I already have four small kids to manage. It's difficult to take it out when I have all of them. And then the dishes, because, you know, we have four kids. We use that dishwasher at least once a day. Like, I need it emptied with all the things that I need in the morning. So that way I can move on with my morning, get them off to school and get home for work. If I also have to empty the dishwasher, that's 10 more minutes of my time that just disappears and costs me right my morning. And so I woke up, I got the baby ready, which I always did. And then I went to go get my girls ready. They share a bedroom. And I was changing my 18-month-old's diaper and I went to put it in the trash and it was so full. Like, could not put another diaper in it. And I was like, okay. So I'm seething inside, but I'm like, okay, deep breaths, just take the trash out. So I go to take the trash out. And as I'm pulling it, it's like so full that it's wedged in there. And I pulled it and my finger caught on the side and sliced open. And I'm just bleeding everywhere. And I'm bleeding. And all the kids are like, Mom, are you okay? Are you okay, Mommy? Do you need a Band-Aid? And I'm like, Mom's okay. Mom's okay. So I'm like getting a Band-Aid. I'm cleaning myself up. Get all the kids downstairs finally. And now I'm like really mad, really mad. And I get to the kitchen and the dishwasher's full and hasn't been emptied. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, I just feel like I'm so unseen, right? Like, my time is not valuable. And because, like many women, the pushback to me would be like, I was running late for work. And I'm like, right. And now I'm running late for work because you were running late for work. And the things that you committed to doing, you didn't, but they impact my morning. And to know I can't do my morning and now I'm late. And so it felt like my time, like Eve talked about, like my time was just less valuable, less important. Mm-hmm. And not only that, like in the mornings, I'm with four small kids and he's by himself, right? And so that was it for me. That was the day I was like, he came home and I was like, I'm seriously done. Like, this is it. We're either walking through this together and you're committing to doing this, or we're just like, I'm going to find a different solution because I'm over it. I can't keep doing this. And part of me is like, oh, maybe if I wasn't 2 months postpartum, I wouldn't have felt such strong emotions. But it really took until that fourth kid and like that specific day where it all just piled on that I was like, nope, I can't, I'm drowning.
I'm curious if, so one of the things that I've recognized between Alyssa and I is that typically it's not the actual labor that's not getting done, but it's the expectations set about it. And then the lack of follow through that really hurts. And I give an example of like, you know, I feel minuscule in comparison with one child, but Alyssa went on like a, I think it was a 6-day trip in November. I knew it was coming. I had full, okay, I'm in dad mode for 6 days straight. Cool. Fully ready for it. And everything went pretty well versus maybe a month ago. Alyssa had a meeting or something at like 3:30, which is usually when we pick our daughter up from daycare. And she like last minute, it's like, hey, like I need you to pick her up. And I was like, what do you mean I need to pick her up? And I only had to do like an hour and a half's worth of, you know, management of our child and parenting. But like, I was really upset just because of the lack of communication or expectation. And I think it had and actually turned up that it was in the calendar. I just wasn't paying attention. But so much of the upset and like the problem that occurs is more about the poor expectation setting in my own head. I'm curious if he had left a note said, hey, I'm so sorry. I didn't do the trash or the dishwasher. Maybe he even like had a half-assed like solution for it. Like I'm planning on doing it first thing when I get home. Like, do you think that would have made a huge difference in that moment?
No, because, and this is one thing I will say is my husband is the king of like, the yes, like, yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll do that. And he like wanted to appease me, right? Like, mm-hmm. Paige, yes, I'm absolutely going to do that. I promise I'm going to do better. I'm going to try. Right. And then he consistently he wasn't doing it. And I told him, I was like, that's almost worse. Cause it's like, you're lying to me. I know it's not a lie, but it feels like a lie. It feels like you're giving me this false hope and I'm just getting let down left and right. And so your apology doesn't really feel like anything because you're not making any changes. You're just saying yes, not doing it and apologizing. And we're in this fun little cycle where I just have to sit here and put a smile on because you're going through the movements, but not actually doing anything. Now, a year and a half later, there are days where he'll text me and be like, I didn't get to the dishwasher. I am very sorry. And now I don't care. Now I'm like, it's fine. No big deal. Like, don't worry about it. Like, I've got it. Thanks for the heads up. But it's because more often than not, he has done it, right? Like, I'm no longer being let down 6 out of 7 days of the week. I am being let down once every couple weeks. And that's not a letdown anymore. That's just life, right? That feels like life. And it happens to us all. But when it's a behavioral pattern that just keeps happening, it just feels insulting at that point. And so on that day, it wouldn't have made a difference. Today, it does. So, yeah.
So I guess maybe a better question would have been, it sounds like he had consistently been dropping that specific ball for either multiple days or like a large amount of days and hadn't built the trust to get sort of the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
If he had been, you know, holding it, and you much more likely would have been able to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. I think I would have been like, this was a bad morning, right? Like that would have just been a bad morning. Like my husband forgot something, not a big deal. My morning was bad, but like we get over it, we move on. But it felt like breaking of the trust, right? Like it really felt like taking advantage of me and my emotions and my trust in him.
Gotcha. Yeah, I feel like that's a huge part of what I try to coach the guys that I work with is okay, the reason she's flipping out on you is because like you've been under delivering for however long. Like that's what we need to start on, is like choose one thing to start, not over delivering, just delivering.
Just do it.
And like let's work on like staying consistent. Like let's put in some like executive functioning tools. And like one guy, one day his wife's either gonna find out or he's gonna be excited about it and he's gonna share with her and then she's gonna be pissed. But he has a tiny little dot on the door frame so that he remembers to do something. It's like a little Sharpie mark or something, and it helps him remember it. I asked him, like, do you think at some point it'll just be a habit? He's like, man, I don't know. I was like, I really hope it does. I think it will be. I trust that it will be. But I think once you get over the hump of like it's habitually being done more than it's not, that's when things get much better. Mm-hmm. When it comes to mental that you were or just like the physical domestic labor that you were doing, what do you think was one of your biggest, well, I guess you sort of answered, the biggest pain point was the inconsistency of the things he had already committed to, dishwasher, trash, having that ready. That was a big one then. Is there one that lingers the most now that like, so I coach my guys to have a weekly meeting of like, okay, what's not working right now for us? I think it's home renovations and both of us being frustrated that neither of us have time or will make time to do them. And so like, that's sort of the topic of conversation. What would you say is one of the top ones that you would bring to like a meeting, you know, next week and like, hey, this thing's kind of not working. Like let's make an improvement here.
Yeah, I'd say the one that is persistent, and I don't know that it will go away ever completely, is the calendar management for 4 kids and 2 working parents. My husband is a first responder, so when there's a storm or anything, he's gone. Like, he'll be gone for 18 hours a day for weeks, and he has no clue when he's coming home. And so I, by default, in those situations, become the calendar keeper. I tell everybody where they're going, when they're going, and why they're going there. And even though we have a shared calendar, I tend to be the person to know what's happening on it and reminding everybody. And so I think that's an area where we can improve. I'd say we've made vast improvements, but at the end of the day, if anybody had a question and wanted to like go to the source of truth, it'd be me, right? That and school emails. I know your daughter's younger, but like once you get to public school, the emails are so long and have so much information and require adding things to the calendar and making notes and emailing teachers or reading the nurse's update, whatever it might be. And again, by default, that's me because they send it to me. They send it to my email, even though they have his email. It's a whole, you know, that's a structural thing, right? That we can talk about, but that one too, right? Like information almost funnels through me and out to everybody else. And so even though he's happy to pick it up from there, it still kind of comes to me as like the hub first. Yeah. And so that's partially by default with our skill sets and how we function. But I do think we could do a better job of spreading that a bit.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we agree on is that mental load is an objective thing that people hold. And the question mm-hmm. is where it's held and who holds it. And it typically falls on women and moms. What would you say is one of the things that he holds mostly the mental load of?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some gendered ones that, you know, I don't believe that domestic labor is gendered, but like he definitely holds the mental load of making sure like we have all the things come winter. You know, we're in Massachusetts. It's like, does the snowblower have gas? Do we know how to turn it on? You know, where are the shovels? Did we salt the driveway? Do we have salt? Do we have windshield wiper fluid? Like those are things that he owns, but that's also his task. That's what he does. And so I don't think about that. Really, I don't have to. I'd say we've also made a big shift. He does all the food now. So not for him and I, we do meal delivery now because we decided that was better for us as a couple. But when it comes to the kids, you know, ordering the food, knowing what we have, scheduling the pickup, picking it up, like that's on him. That's all him. And so I will participate in that by saying like, hey, I used all of this today or I've added it to the cart. Just so you know, the kids like used all the ketchup today, whatever it might be. I participate in that way, but I'm pretty hands off at this point. I don't really think about it. It's just something that's on a schedule and he runs with.
Gotcha. It sounds like probably the next question I was going to ask was sort of in the typical like gender divide of things. What is like the least common? What is the most typical like woman thing that gets owned that he owns? Do you think it's food?
I think it's food. Yeah, I think it's food. He does a lot when it comes to taking kids to activities, right? So like, I think he started to own more of that in the last couple of years, like going to Taekwondo twice a week. He does, my son has therapy on Mondays, and he does that with him. I don't do that at all. And sometimes I have this weird mom guilt because it's so assumed that moms do those things. And I worry his therapists think poorly of me, which is so like crazy that that's so ingrained in me. But yeah, he owns those things. Those are his and he does that. And I think in more traditional situations, that would be me doing all that. Mm.
The mom guilt is pretty interesting because I totally know what you're saying. There's a lot of moments when I recognize that I feel like the bigger issue or like the impact of me not pulling my weight in a certain area or that I'm almost pulling my weight too much in an area is that Alyssa's going to start to get some mom guilt around it. What are some ways maybe you go about navigating that? Or like, do you have almost a mantra that you have in your back pocket for when you're finding yourself in that spot?
Yeah, I found myself there yesterday, actually. I had to go to a baby shower. And my husband had to work that afternoon because there was a storm coming and he wasn't feeling well. And I was still going to go, right? And I'm like, he doesn't feel good. He's got the kids. It's Sunday. Sunday's a big day in our house. Like I have to do one of my daughter's hair. Like there's a lot that goes on Sundays. And I was like, here I am. I'm leaving for like 4 hours, 5 hours. And I'm just, you know, we're going to be ships passing in the night and I'm coming home. And I remember being upstairs being like, oh, I'll try and sneak out. Or I should sneak out early, right? Like I should get out early and get home and help and do all the things that I would normally do on a Sunday. And then I just had to remind myself, like as I was getting ready, I was like, okay, Paige, it's 5 hours. 5 hours out of how many hours in a week that you are taking outside of this house. Mm-hmm. Like that's okay. Like you can have five. That's not like, and at the same time, it's like, it's funny. Women will do this to ourselves for things like a baby shower. It's not like I'm going to like get a massage and go to the spa for 5 hours. Like I'm going to something for my community. I'm showering this mother who's going to have a baby. I'm not just like doing whatever I want. But even if I was, I really don't want to feel bad about that anymore, right? I want to be able to take that time for myself in the same way that we joke that dads go golfing for, you know, 18 holes every Saturday. Like, how come moms feel such guilt when we do that? So yeah, I don't have a mantra, but I definitely just am trying to say to myself in my brain, like, stop, just stop, just go do the thing, enjoy yourself, stop worrying about it. It's all fine. It's all fine.
I think the amount of hours that are in a week, literally the number 24 times seven is the most under-known number, like in our, like, do you know what the number is?
No.
It's 168.
Okay.
I think everyone should know that quick multiplication in their head. I tried to ingrain that in my math students for years, was like, yeah, there's only one number you should actually know, which is 24 times seven, it's 168.
Yeah. I did do the work once of putting it in an Excel spreadsheet of like how much time I have just for me, mm-hmm. how much time I do caretaking, how much time I do at work, and then like him as well, just because it was so uneven at one point where I was like, I'm getting, because I work from home too, so I'm always here and always mm-hmm. on. I was like, I don't even get a 30-minute car ride. I get nothing. Nothing away from this house. And so it wasn't about a like, this is what I do, this is what you do. It was like, this is what I don't have, right? Like, I need more for just me. That yeah. isn't the 5-minute drive back from daycare. Like, I need more than 5 minutes.
That isn't the 12 minutes that you record and upload your TikToks.
I know. I know. Yeah. In between my meetings or when I'm always doing it when I'm like heating up my lunch, which is why I'm always in my kitchen.
I was going to ask about your habits around content creation. I wanted to also throw in one of my favorite reels or videos from Jimmy on relationships is the golf one where he's like, oh, I'm going out for golf, honey. And then his alter, the woman in the skit says, oh yeah, cool. Hey, I'm going to get to learn golf too. And he's like, wait, what? And then, yeah. and then he's like, well, how long do you think you're gone? Well, I don't know. I mean, you're gone, what, 5-6 hours? So I guess as long as it takes. And he's like, well, so I guess you're going to be, I'll be with the kids. Yeah. I mean, I do it every Saturday. There's no reason you can't. And the punchline's like, you know, wouldn't it be nice if like you did gardening or say, oh yeah, then I can like have my time and then like I can manage all the chores, make sure everyone's needs are met. Nah, I'll take the 6-hour break.
Right. Yeah. I was dying laughing at that one. Cause a week before I had gone viral for saying that men's hobbies took them out of the house and women's mm-hmm. hobbies kept them in the house and that we had less time for leisure. And, I got ripped up in my comments, mostly from men, about like, what are you talking about? Like, we don't do that. And then Jimmy's came out and I was like, I guess I'm not alone. So that feels better. Like, I'm not alone. Yeah. I'm thinking this.
I wish I could receive more of the men that like, I wish I could just be like a bouncer in your comments or something. Maybe I should just post up in there. Anytime you tag me,
who do that. They're like I always go in and I see that they've already gone in. I'm like, oh, I don't need to do anything. They're on it.
Yeah. No. Start throwing haymakers at them. Yeah. Cause I feel like it's almost like I don't have enough opportunities because I have a 91% woman audience. I'm sure yours is probably pretty similar.
Yeah.
I don't know. The guys don't touch my stuff. They're either afraid of me or like they know they're not having it. And they know that when I post up their comment in full blast.
Yeah.
What do you think it is that gives them the permission to give you shit, but not me?
Yeah. I think it's partially that I'm a woman, right? Like I think these men, the men who are willing to say the things that they say, view women in a particular light, right? As less than, less valuable, as if our time and what we do is less valuable. So they feel like they have this like ownership over it, right? They can say this because they are in charge. Like they are men, we are women. We should know our place, right? Some of the comments are so wild to me that I just laugh, right? Like I just laugh it off. But some of them are really disappointing in a way to know that that's still such a prevalent way of thinking, right, in our country. And the narrative is always like, I can't imagine being married to her. Like, could you imagine listening to her every day? Could you imagine how miserable her husband is? Like, that's a lot of the comments. And then there's the stupid, like, get back in the kitchen comments, right? Like, there's a lot of those. And then there's some even more hurtful ones, or ones that are just so uneducated, right? And I do my best to respond to a lot of them, because I think it's important to respond. Because the second I respond and the video does well and they see all these comments from women, and then the women find them, right? Like, the women always find them and then go to their profile and DM them, which I don't ask them to do. They just do that. Mm-hmm. The comment disappears, the profile gets blocked. And I'm like, if you can't take the heat, then don't leave the comment. Like, don't come at me and expect me not to defend myself. And often I'm not even defending myself. I'm defending an ideology, right? Like, I'm not even defending me. I'm defending women and the structures that keep women where we are. And so I'm always a little bit vindicated in that. When, like, when they can't stand that, when they have to take their comment down, I'm like, all right, I know that they can't deal with it. So different playing field.
Yeah, I find it super satisfying. I don't know if it's satisfying, but also a little bit disappointing that they don't have the courage to keep it up. And like, I can proudly say there has been at least one person that I've changed their mind.
That's great.
One out of probably a couple hundred thousand comments, but one. And the other day I also commented, someone just disagreed. It was my blueberry muffins video. You can't ask your wife a question was their comment. And I said, hey, if you want to chat about it, book a call with me. Like, we don't have it, you know, it's a sales call for people that want to do my programs, but he talked with me for like 20 minutes. It was wild. And it was interesting hearing his thought. Was pretty much, he was calling it like a bid for connection, and, or he was saying that, what was the other thing? He was kind of saying that a lot of times we just jump to that, the assumption that the question is being asked out of like ignorance. And he's like, why don't we approach it with more curiosity? And I said, I think that a lot of women aren't doing that because they've been doing that historically. And they're tired of trying to be curious when they know it's just laziness for the most part.
That makes sense. I mean, it's different for everyone, right? But I think it also depends on like the structures of your home and your life, right? Like, there'll be times where I'm on my phone, right, and I'm doing something, and my husband will say something to me like 10 times, and I'm like, you can see that I'm doing something, right? Like, this is annoying. Like, you could answer your own question or like move on. And he's like, well, you're just looking at your phone. And I'm like, I'm answering an email to our child's teacher. I'm not just on my phone, like playing, right? Like, and so it's this like idea of how we view each other too, right? Like, and in those moments and us having those conversations to be like, hey, I'm not just staring at my phone, ignoring you. Like, I'm doing something right here. So like, if you actually need me, I'll look, you know, tell me that, like, hey, Paige, I really need your input on this, like whatever. But if you just keep asking me questions and you feel like I'm ignoring you, like neither of us are getting what we want. We're both just like getting annoyed at each other. So let's see each other a bit more, right? Like, if I'm on my phone, don't assume I'm scrolling TikTok. Maybe assume that if I'm not answering you, I'm probably doing something of value here. Yeah. And I'll look up when I can.
Yeah, I think maybe like the last 6 months or so. So Alyssa has been setting harsher boundaries with me around something similar, where she'd be like, shh, or she'll like just give me like, ugh. Like, she'll give me those like quick responses because she doesn't want to lose her train of thought. So she's not going to say words. And at some point, like, I got the message. It probably took me much longer than it should have. But I started addressing her with a question or a comment or something that I wanted to communicate. As she's on her phone, sometimes I'll even see that she's playing a game on there. And out of habit, I will say, hey, I'll let you finish the text that you're working on. And sometimes she'll say, oh, no, I'm just gaming, what's up? And sometimes she'll say, thank you. Sometimes she'll say nothing. And then I'll just wait for like a prompt or of like her either looking up or like, hey, what's up? Or like, I'll just assume that it's going to be a couple minutes and I'll wait my turn. But I think I should ask her about that one of these days. I feel like it's working so much better. There are so many less moments of, you know, I think it's fair that she's given me a grunt or a hot sigh or something. And it's always a little disappointing to me, like, oh, like it used to be like, wow, she's being a jerk today, huh? And then I think over time, as I've been like, I'll be responding to like an in-depth DM or something and she'll ask me, I'll be like, please let me finish this. Mm-hmm. I think it honestly probably took me experiencing the other end of it to make behavior change and to like really see the invisible work that was being done, you know, tapping on the screen. It's always interesting seeing like how to better approach those conversations and like what it's going to take to get it through the head of the person that's, you know, not getting it.
Yeah. And there was that idea during the pandemic too, that like working moms, right, would always have kids running in the background and screaming and we'd be on calls and dads would be like, no, they never bother me. And it's like, well, why do you think they're not bothering you? Right. Like there's a layer of protection over your time and what you're doing sometimes in those instances. And especially in things like typing on a phone or something that maybe doesn't look like it has value. Right. Unlike my husband snowblowing the driveway. If I kept just talking at him while he was snowblowing, people would be like, obviously he's not listening to you. Like he's doing something that has value. He's snowblowing. But me emailing my kid's teacher on my phone just looks like me being like a rude wife. Right. So it's that balance, right? Of like understanding each other and how we all work, and all of that is valuable, even if you can't see it, right? It is invisible. It's invisible to all of us, but acknowledging it helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be like a worth like a long campaign of videos about, because I think that is such a small thing that probably every couple deals with in either a different way, or they don't deal with it at all and they get pissed at each other all the time. I should probably do it. I got like three clips out of that conversation, so that'll be good. Sort of speaking of problems, so someone asked me this question recently. I kind of teared up in answering it. I'm happy to answer it first, give you a minute to think about it. If you could give your life to one cause or like solve one really large specific problem, do you know what it would be? I'll go first.
Yeah, you go first.
I think a lot of people ask me what my aha moment was with like understanding mental load, domestic labor, etc. Honestly, it wasn't fully having the kid. It was reading Fair Play, I think, and having the audience of women that have held me accountable to being better. But I do think that seeing the challenges of like postpartum with 4 months of paternity leave, three of them were paid for by partially the state and part my employer. And then the other month was medical leave because I got appendicitis and then had surgery. I manifested that shit.
Yeah.
It was literally, I had texted my boss like 4 hours before I ended up going to the doctor. I was like, yep, see you on Monday. Guess the 4 months that I thought I was going to have isn't going to happen. And then I got surgery the next night. Wow. That's another story for another day. But I think that paternity leave made a significant impact on my understanding of all of the work that was getting done. And I would not have understood that if I was still doing my, you know, my masculine responsibility of bringing money home and, you know, making sure all the things you can see on paper were done, but not the caring and the emotional and like the, even just me appreciating going to Walgreens down the street, like, oh, I get to get out of the house for 20 minutes. Like that was huge. Like I would not have experienced that if I hadn't been on paternity leave. So like if I were to die tomorrow, but I got to solve one problem, I think it would be like paid paternity leave and having government officials like figure out their differences and pay a little bit less for military spending and put it towards paternity leave.
Yeah. 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 I have two big things that I care about. That was one of them. Because I think until men are able to access those things, we will never have kind of equitable opportunities, right? Women will always be kind of taking a step back in careers, right? And earning potentials, even in just like their mental health, whatever it might be, when women are the ones kind of taking that leave, if it's available to them, which it isn't always, right? And men don't, that sets the stage for this mental load domestic labor conversation. Like the second you welcome that child and your husband goes off to work the next week and you stay at home, it almost creates this divide as like, this is mine, that is yours. Never shall they cross, right? But in reality, if men were given that same opportunity to stay at home and all women had that opportunity, care work in general would be valued so much more in our country. And I think that would change a lot of this conversation around the mental load and domestic labor and what that all looks like. I think the cause that I hang my hat on and really try to talk about and bring light to is obviously the childcare crisis. So anybody who follows me knows I talk a ton about this. And I find that I have a slightly unique perspective on it because I worked in daycares for almost 10 years as an assistant and a teacher. So all through high school, all through college, I worked in daycares. And then after I was a nanny, and then I entered corporate America and kind of left childcare behind. And now I'm on the other side. I'm the one paying for that childcare. And I'm in this really unique place where my daughter's teachers are women I worked with when I was 16. Like I know them, I worked alongside Wow. them, and I know what they get paid and I know how much I'm paying and they're not aligned. And I know that we all know that the US is so far behind other countries in the infrastructure that is provided for families to thrive. We don't have universal pre-K. Most states don't have free school lunch for kids, right? Like this whole idea of like how we can support children and families is so wide reaching. And there's this really narrow opposition to it, which is often like, why should my tax dollars pay for your kids, right? And it's like, why should my tax dollars pay for your road? You know, I don't know. But like, that's not the kind of conversation I'm trying to have. What I'm trying to bring light to is the fact that it can be different, it should be different, and it would be beneficial to us as an economy if it was different. And we can look to other countries where it is. And I even think of, you know, my town didn't even have free kindergarten until last year. Like you had to pay for kindergarten for full day.
What?
My sister still pays. She's in the town next to me. She pays. And there's this, people don't see that. People don't see the cost. And they also brush off again that care work of child care workers, teachers, all of these people in these professions who are so underpaid, right? Like it has wide-reaching impact. So if there's something that there's so many things I hope that I can have impact on, but that's a really important one to me because obviously it impacts me, but I can afford it. And I know so many families that can't. And I think it's important that the people like me who can afford it advocate for it to be different for the people who can't, because I can't imagine being in a place where I couldn't afford childcare and was forced out of the workforce or even forced to not have children because I couldn't actually afford it. And a lot of these daycare workers can't afford it themselves, right? Like they can't do it and that's their career. And so it's just so sad and frustrating. And again, plays into the mental load conversation because when women are forced out of the workforce, they are forced back into those devalued care roles that often lead to this kind of inequitable division of labor in a home.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had a better direct response to when people say, well, why should I put my tax dollars towards, you know, caring for your kids? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a direct like ROI, but I do think like the culture of our country would totally change because if you have government employees or, you know, representatives saying, you know what, we actually value the work that's being done at home and we want to pay for it to make sure it's done well. One, you're having a new value placed on the domestic labor and the mental load that's being done and the emotional labor. And then along with that, like you're just going to have much more emotionally like well-adjusted children. You're going to have like, when you go on the road and you buy stuff and you interact with your community, like you're just going to be surrounded by a better fulfilled set of people that have like appropriate attachment with their parents. And, you know, that their everyone's cups, I think, will be much more filled. I can't say I love taxes, but like I super understand their value. Like recently someone wanted to pay cash wanted me to pay cash for something instead of Venmo because they didn't want to pay tax. I was like, yeah, but we got to fix the roads that I had to travel 2 hours to get to you. Like, so I've been slowly trying to better appreciate the taxes that I pay and figure out a more direct correlation ROI for it to like logically explain to people. But right now it's like, I know correlatively that it's going to impact our culture in a lot of positive ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something as simple as, right, like when I'm 80, who's the doctor who's taking care of me, right? Like that's somebody who's a child right now, or they're not even born yet. Who knows, right? And so it's that idea too, which is like every person has value, but especially these children, right? Like, and also children, none of us got to decide what family we're born into, right? And none of us get to decide what privilege we have or don't have. And so to make a blanket statement, like, why should my money pay for your child? It's like, well, not, you know, it's not about my child. It's about all the children. Like every child deserves a fair opportunity. And that's just not how our country operates, right? It's so much based on privilege and luck of the draw, really. Like, where were you born? Who were your parents? And how far can that get you?
I think I want to ask one more question that I think you do a good job navigating. And I'm curious if you have like almost a playbook for how you think about it. So one of the things that you talk about is like, I know I'm privileged to pay this much for childcare. How do you speak about social issues where you have to consistently acknowledge your privilege to be able to speak about them? And like, one, not piss off a ton of people, but like not have your privilege like overshadow what you're saying. I think you do a good job of that. Now, I'm also coming from a place of privilege and like knowing that I can work from home and I'm in a house. And there's a lot of things that I have a lot of first world problems, I think. But how do you go about navigating, you know, making content from that perspective?
I try to tread lightly, right? Because I want to make sure I'm not speaking out of turn to anybody else's experience, right? Like, I don't want to pretend that I know what it's like to not be sitting in the privileged position that I am. I try to educate myself and follow creators who are speaking out about these things, read books about it. You know, I have people in my family who are very involved in activism and things like that. And so that has helped maybe color how I view it more. Because I think if you'd asked me these questions 5, 10 years ago, I'd be like, no, I work really hard. I work really hard. I have a good job. You know, I did all the right things and that's why I have what I have. And now as a 34-year-old, I can say like, no, my family, where I grew up, the opportunities they gave me, generational wealth, even though I'm not wealthy, but like there is still generational wealth in what I had versus what my parents even had. And those are all the reasons that I am where I am. And I had the opportunity actually in college to live with people who came from difficult background and they were my roommates and they called me out of my shit a lot. They'd be like, Paige, are you kidding? Like, do you know how like white and privileged you sound? And one of them was black. And like, so he would call me out and I'd be like, I would feel really defensive in the moment, but obviously like use it as an opportunity to learn and to grow and to change. And I will actually say if it wasn't for living with them, because I lived with them for like 3 years, like I don't know if I would have been on that same learning trajectory. Like I think that actually, which it's not their job to teach me, like I want to say that, but like that is just what happened in my life. And it changed the way I viewed the world, right? Like, because I was living with them and got to learn about their lives and what they experienced. And they were able to keep calling me out on things that I didn't see. And so when I talk about it, I think it's important for me to acknowledge my privilege, because if I don't acknowledge my privilege, right, then how can I actually have impact on the people that this is affecting, right? Like it's not affecting me in this way, but it doesn't mean that I can't help hopefully change the narrative and change the resourcing that goes to these causes. But I think it's really difficult for me to consume content from people who are blind to their privilege, right? And
like Dave Ramsey.
Yes. But just any, right? When there's no acknowledgement of it, like, oh, like we just bought this new house and we worked so hard for this house. And it's like, you did, right? Like you did, but like, it's a $1 million home. So like, let's acknowledge that. Like, let's talk about that. And be cognizant of that fact, right? I think it's important that we have that, not everybody has to do it, but I know that I connect more with people who kind of put their cards on the table and say like, I get it. Like, I'll take ownership. I know I have this. Doesn't make me not privileged. Like, I'm still privileged today. I still have opportunities other people don't have because of that privilege. And so it's hard to navigate, but I think important to try. And I don't know that I'm doing it right, but I'm trying.
Yeah. Again, coming from a privileged place from what I've watched of you doing it, I think you do a good job navigating that. I know that it's at the end of the podcast, so I can say it. I made a comment, was it last year, right around this time, where there was a phone call that a new landlord, they're about to buy a house and they're about to push out pretty much a family that couldn't afford it. And this guy was like unloading on the content creator that made that call. Totally understood that. And I had made a comment video talking about how, like, I definitely don't agree with what they're doing. One of the things that, so we have a multifamily house in Massachusetts, that we're privileged to be able to afford and to figure out. And we didn't collect rent for 22 months and we're like 5 months away from being bankrupt. And you know, we had help from our parents as well. I think I had said that we only increased the rent by like 5% or something. What felt normal to me. And then, you know, they came back after me in the comments pointing out my privilege. And I think the other comment I had said is that like, money is a game. And I know that it is absolutely not a game for a lot of people. And I think some people are, I think I had been living in survival mode for a really long time around money. I think that's kind of what my parents taught me. And then I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I played the cash flow game, which changed my perspective on money. And so I think sometimes I still think there's some merit to that statement, and there's tons of people that probably shouldn't hear it and aren't wanting to hear it and like probably aren't ready to hear it. And similar, like when I was 18 and I needed to be told like the work that my mom did around the house, like has a lot of value. She probably drilled that into me. And then I'm getting to, you know, age 30 when we have our kid and like, how come no one told me this? No, we told you. You weren't listening. You weren't ready for it.
It's all about perspective, right?
Yeah. I've certainly had a handful of mishaps with my privilege. So I'm glad that I've had I can't call them school of hard knocks, but school of hard comments for sure. And rough response videos. That's one of the few that I actually made I just made it private. I didn't take it down, but I was like, this is for my mental health sake. I can't keep receiving these comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Paige, thank you for joining me today. This has been really fun to talk with you because I've probably consumed, I don't know, at this point, probably a couple hours worth of your content. So having like a long conversation is really cool. People can find you on TikTok and Instagram. She's a Paige Turner, right?
She is a Paige Turner. That's right.
Which is not actually your last name, Paige Connell.
It is not.
Are there any other things that you'd like to point people to?
No, I think you'll find me there. I do have a website, but you know, the best place to find me is on Instagram and TikTok for now.
Sounds good. Well, Paige, thank you again for joining us. And I look forward to seeing more good things come from you.
Thanks for having me.